First of all, Elliot, great series that we just saw. I know it was a sweep. I know after game one we said we want six more just like that. It was a sweep, did it feel like a sweep to you?
No, I wouldn't say it did. I mean, there was the one overtime game last night. Could have gone either way. First game could have gone either way. I mean, the dominant one was the second one. I think we all recognize that Colorado was the better team. But it certainly felt like it should have gone on for more games than just four, at least to me anyway.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that there was impressive about Colorado that we learned through all of this, and we'll get to Cale Makar here in a couple of moments and Nathan MacKinnon, et cetera, but the way that they were able to slow the Oilers down in the neutral zone in a way that Calgary wasn't able to do. Like, it almost seemed as if, and maybe it's sort of counterintuitive and maybe it's just based on reputation, but you can make the point that you would have thought that Calgary would be able to do to Edmonton in the neutral zone what Colorado was able to do. What I'm getting at is we focus a lot on the offense of the Colorado Avalanche. They defend really well, and we learned that with this Oilers series. They slowed Edmonton right down in the neutral zone.
They did. I mean, the most amazing stat of the series was that 5-on-5, McDavid didn't have a rush chance until game four.
Crazy.
I mean, that's almost unheard of considering everything he does and how great he is. And I guess when you're at home and you can put Makar and Toews out there together, it's a problem for everybody else. And when you're on the road and you can ensure that one of them is on the ice at every time, it's a problem for everybody else, particularly now that Byram has really come on these playoffs. You can have great offensive talent, but you've got to be able to check and defend to win, and Colorado can certainly do that. I mean, those Edmonton guys, they gave their all, especially McDavid and particularly Draisaitl. I really think the difference was in a lot of ways down the lineup. I just think that Colorado had a lot more from their depth than Edmonton did, especially up front.
You mentioned Draisaitl there, and I mentioned off the top of the show, like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what it is. We're going to find out eventually.
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
But I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But if we, like, I'm just wondering, like, what could the big reveal, you know, produce that would absolutely shock you? And to me, it's if we find out this is a high ankle sprain,
yeah,
I'm going to say this is like a playoff performance for the ages. Ask anyone who's ever had one. It is agony to walk around your house or your apartment or out to get the mail, let alone go through the playoffs with it. Like, what would just – and to be productive and 32 points and, like, I'm wondering
in
if
three
you just
rounds.
Saw – in three rounds. Like, I'm wondering,
yes,
if we just saw one of the great playoff performances of the salary cap era. That was remarkable for each.
No, we absolutely did. You know, whether you're not, you don't have to wonder, Jeff, it absolutely was. I kind of butchered it last night when I said it before overtime. Malkin at 36 is the highest in the salary cap era. And then I said these guys were the first two with 30 cents. I meant 30 and three rounds. And
right.
I didn't say it the way I meant it to come across. I mean, McDavid ended up with 33 points. I mean, 33 points in three rounds. That's ridiculous. It's 16 games. Like, Draisaitl averaged 2 points a game, and McDavid averaged, I guess it's 2.25. Like, it's incredible. I mean, it's really unbelievable what those guys did. You know, I would be shocked if Draisaitl didn't have a high ankle sprain. And the only thing I'm really wondering, Jeff, is there more? Like, is there another injury there that we're not aware of? He was phenomenal. I mean, you could see he was conserving his energy for whatever he could do on the ice. And when that adrenaline wears off, when you go back to the bench, you feel the pain more. And, you know, it was an incredible performance. It really was. You know, it's funny. Like, I had someone say to me this morning, they're like, do you think that's healthy for him? Do you think he should be doing that? And, you know, my answer is, if I have something in life that I really care about, that I want to complete or accomplish, I will crawl through swampland to do it. And, You know, there are things in life that you decide that are important to you that you will do things that are not normal to be successful at them. And, you know, I think it's Drysdale's choice. I do. And if that's the choice he wants, I'm not going to argue with it. And I'm so impressed by it.
Yeah. So what happens now? You know, I was mentioning off the top, you know, decisions on Evander Kane, decisions on goaltending, decisions on defensemen, and Darnell Nurse goes to 925 next season. What happens next in your estimation with the Oilers?
I think number one, I assume they'll get Woodcroft extended. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the first thing that happens. And then I think they're going to have conversations around, you know, what they want to do. I mean, they don't have a ton of cap room. I'm assuming they want to re-sign Evander Kane. Like the one thing that I think could be really crazy about the whole Kane situation is, what happens if the arbitrator decides that Kane has to go back to San Jose? Okay, like that might actually be a situation is, does San Jose trade his contract to the Oilers?
But correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't this something that the NHL and PA have already sorted out or were in the process of sorting out? Like, these are all the contingencies
first of all, an arbitrator has to rule if San Jose was right to terminate the deal.
Right, but I was under the impression that the NHL and the PA were working out, okay, so what are all these contingencies? If it's ruled that he has to go back to San Jose, what does this mean then?
Yeah, well, I think, but we don't know the answer to that yet.
So if it's ruled that he has to go back to San Jose, that's a big chunk of change.
Well, but the thing is, like, so I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and he's like, just don't do this until they're out. So they're out now. But, like, one of the things he was saying to me, and this is all theoretical, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what happens if, say, for argument's sake, Kane's contract is reinstated and San Jose trades it to Edmonton and eats some of the money?
Could happen, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, this stuff is
Is it 5 million?
I think it's 3 times 7.
No, seven. Yeah. I apologize. That's $7 million. Yeah. $7 million. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, so that's one thing that has to get sorted out here. So, number one, you know, is Edmonton going to try to re-sign Kane? I assume they will. You know, there's some arbitration-eligible players there for the Oilers. How do they feel about, like, we've already talked about the whole qualifying offer situation around the league. The walkaway number is just under 4.6. There's a bunch of players that teams are not sure about at this time. How does Edmonton feel about those numbers for their arbitration-eligible players, players like Puljujärvi and Fogel?
I think Fogel's still got term. I think Yamamoto is.
Oh, right. Excuse me. You're right. Not Fogel. That's right. It's Puljujärvi is obviously the number one guy on the list.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So that's another thing. And, you know, I think the other thing is just overall, you know, what's the direction of where they want to go in terms of a lot of these decisions? They have to find another goalie. Mm-hmm. Are they going next year with Smith Skinner?
Well, right now, contractually, that's what they're looking at because Skinner needs waivers.
Right.
Skinner needs waivers.
But is that the decision?
They have Mike Smith they want for one to make. More season.
Yeah. Well, they want to make. So, like, between Kane's future and the arbitration cases and the needing another goaltender, I mean, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made.
You know, I was making the point off the top that one of the first things, much like Rutherford in Vancouver, that Ken Holland needs is cap space. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they go the buyout route with players. I don't know, essentially, if they try to, you know, just move contracts just to get rid of them, to attach something along with them. Mm-hmm. But Darnell Nurse goes to 925. next season. That's a big one. And if you're Ken Holland, one of the things here, Freeze, that you need is some flexibility, because right now you don't really have it.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. And the thing is, they don't have a ton of picks, right?
Edmonton? No. Well, they've got their first this year, but then after that, they don't pick again.
But Ken Holland
has fought
to keep that first.
Correct.
Like, this year, he had all sorts of opportunity to deal that first, and he refused to do it, which I thought for good reason.
Based on what he was being offered, I don't think he should have surrendered a first. Like, based on what the market was, I don't think he should have surrendered a first.
Mm-hmm. I can't see him attaching a first to clear up cap room.
I don't think he would do that. I still do, you know, wonder what happens with Darcy Kemper in the offseason. He's a free agent.
Yes, he is.
Edmonton tried before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to see him at least backing up last night. So
I thought it was interesting that Kelly said he would have put him in for the third period.
There are a couple of people that texted me who just said, you know what, forget it, you know, get Kemper in there. Kelly, I don't know how many people would have felt that same way, but, I think there was that vibe out there.
Kelly's the only one that matters.
Well, he's a goalie. He knows. Goalies, no goalies. Final thought on the series, maybe something from Colorado. I mean, this was a series where, listen, man, if you didn't, you've been living under a rock and you didn't know the name Cale Makar before, you know the name Cale Makar. Just a casual 5-point night.
Yeah, and Kelly's got friends texting him saying he's the best defenseman since Bobby.
Saw that.
I think the most interesting thing now is going to be Kadri. They're going to get, today's what, the 7th?
Today's the June 7th, yes.
So the first day of the first game of the Stanley Cup final is either going to be June 15th or 18th.
Yeah.
Kadri had surgery on Monday, which was yesterday.
How quickly can a thumb heal? How quickly can a thumb
and
heal?
I think it has something to do with it's not going to be fully healed, but is there enough recovery in that time that Kadri's a player? That's the question I think we're all looking at here.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Again, congratulations to the Avalanche. They make it to the Stanley Cup final. We now wait to see what happens with the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 4 is later on this evening. All right. This one, kind of a surprise for a lot of people, I think, last night. The Boston Bruins relieving Bruce Cassidy of his duties as head coach of the Boston Bruins. Did this one catch you, Elliot?
Oh, yeah. I was surprised. Remember at his end of year media conference, Cam Neely did hint that there were potentially problems there and that they might think about making a coaching change. But I thought when we got basically to the mid late third round that we were safe. So I was surprised. There's a couple of things that I just want to mention about the Bruins overall. I know there have been some rumblings today that they're going to try to trade David Pastrnak. I don't believe that's the case, at least not initially. I believe their intention is to sign him. And if for whatever reason they get the impression that they can't sign him, then I think that may change. But the initial sense I'm getting is that their goal is to sign him.
Just so all of our listeners know, he has one more year left at 6.6, and then he's an unrestricted free agent, just so we're all on the same page.
And so I do believe that they are interested in signing Pastrnak first, and that is their goal. I don't believe their goal is to trade him. Second, you know, someone was saying to me this morning that they're not convinced the Bruins are all in on a rebuild. Now, you know, they said that they've got a lot of guys hurt, like Marchand, McAvoy, Grizzlick are going to begin next year out, and Riley will be close. And he thinks that but the Bruins don't necessarily think he thinks what the Bruins believe is if we can tread water for the beginning of next year, we could be fine at the end. Now, I think the one thing that could kind of sway this a little bit is Bergeron's decision and what he decides to do. I mean, you obviously are going to feel a lot more comfortable if you have Bergeron there to help you get through the beginning of next year while everybody's out. But yeah. Someone suggested to me this morning not to immediately assume that this is a rebuild for the Bruins, that they know that everybody's coming back, and you know they might look at it at least now, and they've got time as, you know, if we can get through the beginning of the year, we should be okay. So those are a couple of things. You know, the one thing about Cassidy is, first of all, I think he's launching to a lot of the top of a lot of open lists. Like, I think Trotz, in a lot of ways, was kind of the guy that a lot of people were waiting for. Yeah. Now, I think once Cassidy gets his legs underneath him, he's going to be equally as wanted. I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch. You know, I had heard that there were some issues between him and some of the younger players. Like, I always think about the Larry Bird rule, right? When he coached, 3 years and that's enough and the message is over. It's clear here that whether Cassidy agrees with it or not, the Bruins felt it was time. And it'll be interesting to see where they go in the direction because, like I said, people are saying that I should wait before declaring that a rebuild is underway or that Pastrnak is going anywhere. Like, they don't think that anything that happened yesterday yet guarantees either of those two things.
You know, Boston could be one of those. If they do commit to at least a step back, albeit brief, like and especially if they bring back Pastrnak and, you know, Marchand is going to come back eventually, even though, you know, 6 months for hip surgery, I always internally, you know, give a player at least a year. If they take a step back, then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, if you're Ottawa, maybe, if you're Buffalo, perhaps, if you're Detroit, are you saying to yourself here, Frege, hang on a second, there's a spot open? Because, you know, you're playing in a division with, you know, the Tampa and Florida and Toronto, so it's tough. But if Boston comes back to the pack, you know, there's three teams there maybe that are saying to themselves, hold on a second here, maybe we have a shot now.
Well, I'm sure that's what everybody's hoping for.
Of course.
And to be honest, I would bet you that's why Boston's maybe looking at it as, we're not necessarily rebuilding yet, because it's a top-heavy division and the bottom part of the group hasn't proven itself yet.
Yeah. You know, Bruce Cassidy could be one of, and I know it's still very fresh, but I'm wondering, you know, if I'm the Dallas Stars, maybe do I look at Bruce Cassidy? Where is Dallas at on their coaching search?
Well, I think they're starting there. I think Dallas is a team that's in the interview process. You know, one of the names I've heard there that might have a legitimate shot at it is Peter DeBoer. I think that is somebody that Dallas has interest in. Like I just said, I think Cassidy, now all these openings, you know, people are going to be calling Cassidy. Mm-hmm. I absolutely think people will be calling Cassidy to see, you know, what his plans are. Does he want to coach right away? I think for some of these openings, he's going to get absolute consideration. You know, you always wonder about, like, you know, Yzerman's an Ottawa area guy. Like, you wonder, like, you know, does Cassidy make sense as someone he's interested in? But I could see Cassidy being on Dallas's list. I've also heard DeBoer is a guy that they like.
You know, Dallas is an interesting situation here. They are going through a sort of evolution here of that team and starting to move in. You know, a lot more is going to be expected of Roope Hintz and Jason Robertson and Miro Heiskanen, some of the younger players on this team. Like, when you're looking for a coach here and you're going through this interview process as Dallas is right now, how much are you thinking, okay, this isn't going to be the Sagan, Ben Klingberg Dallas Stars anymore? We're skewing a lot younger here now.
Well, I think that's definitely true. That's absolutely true. Except for Pavelski, who's the ageless wonder at 37.
Yeah.
But look, their top forwards now are Robertson and Hintz. Their top defenseman is Heiskanen. Their number one goalie is Ottinger.
Yeah.
You know, I think the one thing about DeBoer is he can be really hard on his goalies. And, you know, Ottinger is young and he's obviously a huge, huge, huge piece of the puzzle in Dallas for the future, the way he played in the playoffs. So you've got to make sure that that's going to be a relationship that's going to be okay if you go down that road. But, I do think the Stars are in a little bit of a turnover. There's no question about that. But those are great players. I mean, you could do a lot worse and have a core of Ottinger, Haskinen, Robertson, and Hintz.
Yeah, no, this thing could turn around quickly, very much for the Dallas Stars, and even turn around. I mean, they just made the Stanley Cup playoffs, and already they're going to transition it to a new group that's already helped get them there. So, it's a good spot if you're the Dallas Stars. Tonight, the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. We talked about resiliency with the Tampa Bay Lightning after Game 3, going down 2-0 and clawing their way back. A lot of that Kucherov. We focus a lot on the Vasilevsky versus Shesterkin in-game battle. What do you look for tonight in Game 4 for each?
Well, I'm looking at the Rangers' health down the middle. Gallant says that he thinks Strome and Goodrow are okay. I'm just reading the tweets. So, Strome left the skate a bit early this morning, and Goodrow didn't skate at all, but it was an optional, so I don't necessarily worry about that too much. I think health down the middle for the Rangers is very important. Obviously, that was Tampa's best game of the series. I still think they have trouble with the Rangers' speed, but Tampa's a hell of a team. Right now, this series, who's going to score at even strength? That's what I'm looking at. There was one goal scored even strength on Sunday, and it was the winning goal. Who's going to score at even strength?
Or do you just have two teams that say, you know what, 5-on-5, we'll play 50-50 and take our chances on the power play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Rangers would be very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to a point in the playoffs where you've got to score at even strength to win. You have to.
Before I let you go, scale of 1 to 10, how wild will it be in Edmonton this offseason? We know Canadian markets after playoff losses or not qualifying for the playoffs, and we think about the Vancouver Canucks.
7.
Can be wild. Do you give Edmonton about a 7?
7.
So watchability is pretty high for Edmonton in the offseason?
I think watchability is high for Edmonton. Look, they've had the taste now, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to go backwards in this league. And when you have that taste, you want more of it.
I know that a lot of people in our organization probably don't feel this way today and didn't last night, but they had a really good season and they lost to an exceptional team. Like, I get it with Edmonton. I know, and some may look at it and go, oh, self-inflicted wound here, self-inflicted wound there. I thought Edmonton had a really good year. And if I would have told you that, around the time that they're doing their scouting meeting in California, that this team was going to make it to the Final Four, you probably would have laughed and had good reason to do so. But, based on what we thought was going to happen to Edmonton at various times in the season, I thought it was not a great year. One team has a great year, but that was a good year for the Oilers.
I think, honestly, Jeff, there's a book to be written about this year in Edmonton. If you look at it, go back to last summer from the Keith trade on in and everything that they did, and it seemed I was calling Ken Holland about some rumor every day for about 12 days straight in January. Like, those calls begin with, oh, I'm so sorry about this again. Because, you really, I don't like anyone to call me that much, so I don't like to call anybody that much. And just where they were and where they ended up, it was a real roller coaster ride. Like, It was a true Yukon striker. For those of you who are not familiar, it's like the big roller coaster at Canada's Wonderland. It was a true Yukon striker of a roller coaster ride this year. And, I think, you take a look, and I think the hardest thing for the Oilers and their fans is how it seemed like everything in this series went against them. And you know me, I don't think that, I don't think the NHL's anti-Oilers, and I don't think, people are biased against the Oilers. But the one thing I do understand is there were a lot of, I didn't like, for example, the Derek Ryan penalty last night. I wasn't crazy about that call at all. But But I think a lot of the other calls that went against the Oilers, I didn't have as big a problem with. But they all seem to go against Edmonton. And that's the worst. Like when you get you come through the high of beating Calgary and how much that meant. And then you get to the low of getting swept in a series where you feel like the world is against you. And even though it probably isn't, you can't be convinced otherwise. And I think that's the hard thing for the Oilers, is that there was a lot of weird bleep that happened in this series. And you're looking at it and you're saying it all seemed to go against them. Everything. And that sucks.
So is this your way of saying, I've already called you twice this morning, don't call me back at all this afternoon?
You know, we also should mention, you know, big story this morning that gets kind of erased in everything else, and that's Marie-Philippe Poulin. I think this is, I think it's really interesting that she's agreed to come on a part-time role. The Canadians really wanted Poulin to join the organization. You know, she was someone that they targeted, that they said she has to be a Montreal Canadian. Like, this is someone we need to have as a Montreal Canadian. And, you know, I obviously the rumors were around and we talked about them, Jeff, after the Olympics, but, you know, she wanted to play, and it's clear here that everybody found a way to make it work so that she would be able to continue her career and still work for the organization.
So as I've been led to believe, the initial conversations were before the Olympics. It was very casual, no pressure, very much. What do you want to do? Want you to understand that whenever you're ready to take the next step in your career, we'll be here waiting, that there'll be a position for you when you choose that it's right for you. But, you know, almost right after the Olympics, you know, Marie-Philippe Poulin was, you know, telling people she wants to go through one more Olympic cycle, which is good news for Canada, bad news for every other country. But she does want to do one more cycle for the Olympics. But she is at least starting now to dip her toe in the NHL waters, which is a great thing. And the game only benefits from having, you know, minds like Marie-Philippe Poulin's remain in it, specifically at the NHL level. This is, as you mentioned, a really big story. So, absolutely. Okay, back to your texting, back to your phone calls. Busy day.
All right, buddy. Speak to you later.
There he is, Elliot Friedman. From 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific. It is the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 4. Rangers lead the series 2-1.